Live from the Gator Grapplers Hall of Fame in Bayou-La-Batre, Louisiana. It's the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour. 30 minutes of no-holds-barred discussion about the exciting and dangerous world of professional alligator wrestling. With your host, the eldest and wisest of the Ringhausen Brothers, author, inventor, philosopher, the first banjoist for the New York Philharmonic, and the legal representative of the International Brotherhood of Professional Alligator Wrestlers, a man whose only fault is that he loves too much, mainly himself, Richard J. Ringhausen. And also featuring the youngest of the Ringhausen Brothers, well-loved song and dance man and self-taught herpetologist, the new overseer of the Bridge of Death, twice decorated Air Force hero sandwich eater, a man with Ringhausen blood coursing through his veins, Craig, 12.5% Ringhausen Johnson. And are you ready for this? Marksman, sculptor, and daredevil, the 7-time world welterweight alligator wrestling champion and winner of the silver medal in alligator wrestling at the 1992 Summer Olympics in Barcelona, Spain, a man who has proven time and time again that he is right about everything, most of the time, also the youngest of the Ringhausen Brothers and the star of your show, Alan J. Ringhausen.
Hey. Thank you, everyone, for having us. So nice to be here.
Good to see you guys again.
Welcome to our friends in Argentina.
You have friends.
Followers of the podcast, Rick.
What about Paraguay? We got anybody in Paraguay?
We call people from Argentina. Argentinians?
Argentiners.
Yeah.
Argentinas.
Argentinas.
That's what Matt calls his wife.
Sargentina?
Argentinians.
What about Argentians?
No.
Come on.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Hey, I just want to talk about board games.
Yeah, what about them?
They've
favorite
changed.
All-time board game. Come on.
Right. Monopoly.
Aggravation.
Aggravation.
What about you?
Aggravation is like a croquet played on a board game.
Yeah. Aggravation and Sorry are very similar, I think.
Yeah, one's with cards and one's with dice, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to have to say the one I've played the most probably is Chutes and Ladders.
Chutes and Ladders? Mm. Where'd you ever play that? We didn't own that.
Me and my kids played that all the time.
Oh.
You, I like Candyland. That's a pretty good one as far as kid game goes.
King Candy. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what's the one, and it's just, well, I like Battleship was good.
Battleship was good. Game.
Yeah.
And then there was another one where you had like the different colored pegs that were hidden behind a thing, and you had to keep trying to match up the colors and.
Oh, Mastermind, I think they called it.
Mastermind.
I don't think I played that one.
Mastermind, of course. The thing is, it's really just a logic game that once you've cracked the code on it, you can win it in an X number of moves every single time you play.
Yeah, right. Okay. I also liked Mousetrap. You know, there's a big build-up to it, and all you really wanted to do was have the whole thing set up so you could trip it. And
yeah,
I saw commercials for that all the time when I was a kid. We never owned it. I really wanted to.
Owned Mousetrap.
No.
I think Chuck Ringhausen owned Mousetrap, and nobody wanted to actually play the miserable long game it took to actually build the trap.
Yeah.
And then, you know, roll dice like 15 times before you actually landed on the square that tripped the mousetrap.
And only one person got to trip it.
Yeah. It was like a Rube Goldberg thing. We just wanted to set up and see if it actually worked. Because the odds were, you know, part of it involved flipping a guy who had to jump up and land in a bathtub to trigger the thing going down. And about I'd say 66% of the time it missed and it wouldn't actually work.
That's you guys remember the game of life? You had that that spinner in the middle. You end up having so many kids, you have to get a second car to like drag them around the game board in your car. Because that car only holds eight people.
Yeah,
six.
I don't want to play a game that's going to depress me.
Yeah. Oh,
you start off with a job making $20,000 a year.
Okay.
So, hey, Johnson, it's just like your real life.
Right. Yeah. Kind
of. Okay, so we played as kids a lot of Monopoly, right?
Yeah.
And we would invite our neighbor cousin,
Chuck. The one who had the mousetrap game.
And we would play Monopoly. But what Chuck didn't know is the Ringhouse brothers were constantly cheating on him.
Oh, Monopoly is probably the best game for cheating of any board game that's out there.
Especially if you're the banker.
Yeah.
That's usually how it went.
It's just like real life. You get a banker to cheat you, you can do anything you want.
Yeah.
And we would just shamelessly, like every time he turned his head, slip each other some extra cash, or whenever you'd say, "Hey, I need a change for 100," and you'd always get back like $200 worth of change from it. He'd never ever caught that ever a single time.
He never won Monopoly ever in his life. Now
you know the funny thing about Monopoly is, you know, what's it take to play a game with like three or four people, like 3 or 4 hours, right?
Oh yeah.
If you play that digitally, like on, you know, they got like a digital version of Monopoly on the Xbox. Yeah. You could zip through a game in like 15, 20 minutes. It's all the moving the pieces and counting out the money and all that other stuff. Man, that's what takes the time.
Well,
playing the game is you're occupying your time. It's not a race.
No. It's a race. I want to win.
Was it Brad and Melody or Brad and Lynette?
Okay.
Which one was? Tell
they
that.
Left me at home with our youngest brother Brad Ferd, Dr. Ferd, in his youth, and our cousin Melody, who was same age as him. Basically, they were, you know, maybe 6 months apart. But everybody left, and they left the older brother in charge of babysitting these two. They weren't like little bitty kids. I mean, they were like 12 or something like that.
But they weren't old enough. They weren't old enough for you to give them beer yet.
No, that was a few years later. But so, you know, it's like a rainy day, and so we set up the Monopoly board, and so we're playing Monopoly, and I can't remember what happened, but they got in an argument about something at the Monopoly board, and Brad, you know, being the hothead, picks up a hotel and throws it at Melody because he landed on her hotel. She throws one back at him, and they just grabbed everything, finally flipped over the board, and actually started fighting each other. I'm like, oh my God. Hey,
Alan, it's the game of life.
Well, that's what it was like Rock'em Sock'em Robots. Did you have that?
Nope.
That's a good game, too.
I wanted it.
Those two fight. It shocked me. I'm like, oh my God. I expected it from Brad, but Melody was holding her own.
Yeah.
Wow.
Pickup sticks. Oh, Clue's a good one, man.
Clue's pretty good. And you really can't cheat.
It can take a long time.
You can't cheat at it, though.
No.
It's hard to cheat at Clue.
No, it takes a conspiracy to cheat. Yeah. It takes more than one person.
Yeah.
But it almost, that would, you know, the cheating at Monopoly is the sort of thing that just kind of happened on the fly. You didn't really plan it ahead of time. To cheat at Clue,
right.
you'd have to be cheating right from the snap to cheat at Clue.
I cheated at Old Maid before when I was like 6. Once the adults found out,
maid.
Yeah. If you put an X on the upper corner of the Old Maid, then you know who's got it, and you never pick it. When
you
the adults
cards, you well, learned to mark cards as a child.
I was 6, man.
Up,
I didn't want. But the adults stopped playing with me after they found out that I was cheating at Old Maid.
See why?
I'm thinking never to play cards with Johnson if you know he's a card marker now.
Well, I was then. I'm not now. I'm a lot better at cards.
We don't know that. We don't know. You know, character building starts at a very early age.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
I love playing Yahtzee because you could yell Yahtzee if you got one.
Yeah, I agree. That's not a bad game.
Yahtzee's a pretty good game.
What strikes me about the whole board game business, have you been to a store like Walmart or Kmart or someplace, there's no Kmart anymore, Target, where they have a bunch of board games, and seen the selection of board games that are out there? I'll bet there's 100 different board games, or maybe 200 of them. I go to visit my kids, like Jackie, and they'll have a whole wall of board games that I've never heard of, like Exploding Cats or Pick the Hitler or some damn thing like that. And they'll want to play some board game that you've never heard of that they're going to just kill you at because it's got so damn many convoluted rules that you can't begin to learn them. But they're still young enough that their brains retain stuff like that.
Right.
So that they can learn them right away and just kill you.
Also, there's all the electronic different games, too.
Hey, Johnson's a gamer. What game do you play, Johnson?
I don't play much anymore, but I like Fortnite, PUBG, both shoot like shooters.
What about Space Invaders?
Yeah, I played that in 82.
Asteroids?
You got asteroids? No, my but dad, my dad sometimes, does.
Sometimes so bad he can't sit on the toilet. Great minds think alike.
Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, that's a good game.
What's the other one? Where's the one where you shoot up a city?
Shoot up a city?
Is it Grand Theft?
Grand Theft Auto. Yeah.
Doesn't that involve shooting up the hood a lot?
Oh, you shoot up anything. It's a pretty wide open game. You can do a lot of driving and you can do heists and different stuff.
Now, Tour of Duty, that's an
Call
Army shoot up.
Huh?
Call of Duty.
Yep.
Now, you were in the Army, Air Force.
All right. There we go.
Did you guys play a lot of Call of Duty in the Air Force? Do actual soldiers play that stuff?
Well, I don't know, but we did in the Air Force.
You beat me to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of military units use video games to help train like pilots and technical positions for hand and eye coordination.
You know, I think
that
those...
they had them play ping pong.
Somebody saw Forrest Gump did that.
Oh yeah, he's pretty good at ping pong. Somebody said that they had that that Titanic sub was run off of a PlayStation controller.
Yeah, it was.
didn't work out well for him, did it?
No. And I think those guys that flew airplanes into the buildings, towers and stuff, all trained on some training machine like that. But that's how they learned to fly an airplane.
Huh. Well, they didn't need to learn to land. You know what I mean? I'm not making light of it, but I mean, video. Right.
No, they just needed to learn to steer.
Right.
Of course, you know, when you go into like Air Force training to fly an airplane, you know, let's say I've never flown an airplane before and I want to learn to fly a jet.
I think we can say that.
Are they going to start me out training to learn to fly a jet? I mean, am I going to start an electronic trainer or do I start up in a plane with someone flying next to me?
I would guess that you're going to start on something electronic.
Rick, you start off sitting on the pilot's lap.
My father-in-law, who flew off the carrier Yorktown in World War II, when he got drafted into the Navy, volunteered to be a naval aviator, and had never flown a plane in his life.
Sir.
I want to fly a jet. Well, it wasn't a jet. It was like what'd they fly, a Mustang or a Custis
P-30,
whatever. Oh, okay. Any event,
Gladiator movies?
Officer and gentleman.
When he learned to fly a plane off of an aircraft carrier, He had these two-seater planes, you know, where you were sitting there, and he said you had an instructor who was flying with you that also had a stick behind him to make sure that you didn't crash the plane. He said, you get up in the plane, and they have you fly, and the guy says, now, you take the stick. He said, and as soon as he said that, the plane went into like a power dive, you know, and he's trying to figure out what it is he's supposed to do. And the whole time, the drill sergeant's sitting behind him, screaming at him, you know, for going to kill him, you know, to get control of the darned airplane. And apparently behind him, the drill instructor's sitting there with his foot against the stick, holding it forward so that there isn't any way to pull it out of the dive till the last second. But he
That's
finally
what
did.
The military's all about.
Yeah, apparently.
You want to be able in the military to make it to a high enough rank that you get to do stuff like that to people who are below you in rank.
Right.
What's the highest rank you got in the military, Johnson?
Oh, you want to know that. E5.
Yeah. Huh?
E5. Was it? E5.
What is it? Well, that's at least three E's below you, or four E's below you.
Right. Right.
Nice math, Rick.
Thanks.
So when you would get to an E, when there'd be an E2, would you spank them around and make them hop? And
no,
skip?
Spanking's not. That's forbidden, I'm pretty sure.
Well, I meant it figuratively.
Oh. Well, in Abu Ghraib, I think it was literal. You remember that?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay. Yeah. No, we would screw with the new people. Send them to another shop and ask them to get the bolt stretcher, or tell them
the
to go get
stretcher.
Yeah. We always used a bolt stretcher, and sometimes you'd have them go get a 10-foot of flight line and bring it back. You know,
the muffler bearings.
You'd be like, yeah. So you'd send them to hydraulic shop, and then the hydraulic shop guys would know what's going on, and be like, oh no, we don't have that. You're gonna have to go to jet shop. These guys would be walking around for 2 hours trying to find, you know, some idiot.
So when you go into the military, what's the rank you start with? Very first rank.
E1.
E1. When you become an E2, do you immediately hunt up an E1 to kind of boss him around just to see
if
you can?
Nah,
what
because
are you looking at?
Mostly because most of these guys make E2 not too long after they get out of basic training. So. You don't hang out at E1 very long.
Can't say they blame you. Okay, Alan, you were wanting to talk about sporting events too.
Yeah.
Recently.
Okay. You know it's a sporting event I don't know anything at all about is soccer.
Oh my God! Over the last few weeks the World Cup's been going on.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Go ahead, Alan. Soccer, Alan.
Huh?
Soccer.
Yeah. Okay, so the
the fuck's going on here?
So the World Cup, FIFA, what is the soccer?
FIFA?
What's that?
Yeah.
Federation of International Football.
Farheads.
Anyway, they got this giant tournament that goes on in a different country every year, and
World
right
Cup
this year is going on in United States of America,
the U.S. of A.
U.S. of A. And my son-in-law, married to my oldest daughter, they go to a
who shall go nameless.
They go to a World Cup match. They're in the second row, 70,000 people in the stadium, and a ball gets kicked into the stand, and my son-in-law catches it.
You're kidding me.
No.
When were they playing against Australia?
They got to give it back, I guess, huh?
They do. They make you give the ball back.
Oh, that's baloney.
Yeah.
They'd have to fight me for it.
I said, you know, let's say our brother Brad, Dr. Ferd, was at a soccer match like that, and they kick a ball in the stand, and he catches it after diving over three rows and knocking down children, but he catches it. What's he going to do with it? Then when they say, all right, toss it back, he's going to sprint to the exit with it.
Oh, yeah. Just like he did with that security guy's pass one time.
Yeah, that wasn't at a sporting event. That was at a concert. That was at the – I don't know if you know this, Craig, or not, but our youngest brother, Brad, was at the Guns N' Roses concert that turned into a riot in St. Louis.
Yeah, I did not know he was at that.
Okay, so
I know the one.
Giant riot, and in the middle of it all, he climbs up on the stage and he says that he's standing there in the middle of the stage looking out at the riot, thinking, "What a great thing this is." And then while
what a great country we live in.
In the middle of the stage, this security guy comes over and is going to throw him off the stage, right? And just as he's throwing Brad off the stage, Brad grabs his security tag and rips it off. And then goes ripping through the crowd. And he said the security guy followed him like he was possessed. Brad said he is out of the venue in the parking lot, and the guy is still chasing him.
Apparently, you lose your badge. It's a big-ass deal.
Yeah.
Did he get it back? Did Brad give it?
No, right. Brad's still alive, and I'm assuming he has that security badge hanging from his mantle.
Oh,
no,
my
gosh. I'm assuming he wears it every time he goes to Riverport. When he's going backstage to talk to the musicians.
The Riverport Riot. He was there.
But I think Brad kind of got into an issue at a ball game where he caught a ball, dived over some people, caught a ball, and
the
guy told that. Next to him has like a little kid there who has his ball glove at the stadium and says, "Would you mind giving the ball to my son?"
Yeah, like
and
that.
And I guess
happen.
Brad said, "Yeah, like no once." And the guy just keeps at him, until Brad exploded. And then it was, "Do you really think you needed to use that kind of language in front of my son?"
Okay, so Johnson, you're a hockey goer. Go to hockey games, right?
Yeah.
If they spank a puck that goes over the glass into the crowd, do you get to keep it?
100% you get to keep it.
Yes.
Really? They're not going to come up and say, "Hey, we want that back."
No. I believe if you catch a football, like it goes over the net when they kick a field goal, I believe you are allowed to keep it, but you have to leave the stadium. So if you want to keep it, you gotta leave the game. But I'm not positive on that, but I thought that was what the rule was there at the NFL.
Okay, let's take a quick poll on the whole business of catching an important dinger, like say Pujols' 700th home run. You're in the stands, catch it. Is it a sort of thing that you think that he should be allowed to possess, that you should just give it back to him?
Alan? No, once it's in the stands, it's yours.
Johnson?
No, that's your ball.
Yeah. You know, all these people say,
they're making millions of dollars.
Say, it's right. Important to him. You know, it's a historic thing. He should be allowed to have, he should have it back. Right.
And I think they threaten you with, once you get out of the stadium, if they don't authenticate it, then, you know, nobody will pay money for it because it's not truly authenticated. I'm like, whatever, I'll still keep it.
I wouldn't care, man. It'd go up on my bookshelf, and I'd tell everyone I caught the 700th home run that Pujols ever hit, which I tell people anyway. So I mean,
I would tell him that he could have it if he gives me half of his salary.
I don't think he wants it that bad.
I guess he's saying, "Go ahead and keep it." And he says, "But I'm not going to sign it." And he'd say, "I already signed your name to it."
Sorry, worth $500,000. Get out of my face.
How much are you going to pay me for it now?
You know,
that'd be the funny thing. You know, you catch Albert Pujols' 700th home run, and immediately you sign his name on it, Albert Pujols, and then he wants it back.
You know, the memorabilia stuff, sports memorabilia, you know, they have all kinds of big auctions of sports memorabilia. They say that at least 80% of sports memorabilia that's being sold is not authentic.
Oh, I believe that. I wouldn't buy anything that was signed by any famous person unless I literally saw them signing it or had a video of them signing something that could be specifically identified. I just assume everything is forged when it comes to signature.
Yeah. I was watching American Pickers, and on that show, one of the guys buys a pair of boxing gloves that were signed by Muhammad Ali. And he paid, you know, some, you know, he paid like $500 for these Muhammad Ali boxing gloves. So they go to some sports memorabilia store to have them appraised to see how much they made off of them. And guys, they're worth about $10. And what is Muhammad Ali's most famous boxer ever? And he pulls out this picture of Muhammad Ali sitting at a desk signing boxing gloves. And there's a pile of them about 30 feet tall behind him of the thousands and thousands of boxing gloves that he signed and sold. That's all he did.
Believe it. Okay.
Until
I don't know if
shaky.
I don't know if fishing's a sport or not, but I've had a specific request for you to tell the Larry Clunk bluegill story.
Really?
Yeah, someone said they wanted to know what episode we discussed that on, and I said I couldn't remember my own name most of the time. There's no way I know what episode, but that I would ask you to tell that story.
Awesome.
Okay, so me and Larry and brother Dennis, Uncle Dan, all went fishing. We were fishing in this pond, and all we were catching were these little tiny bluegill. I mean, just one after another after another. And
you didn't even have to bait the hook.
I mean, they were so small that, you know, like, hell, we could use these for bait to catch bigger fish if the little fish would just leave them alone. But, you know, so we were doing this, and Larry's like, hell, I could, because he had gone through this phase of swallowing goldfish at parties just for fun.
Like, if you invited Larry Clunk to your house at a certain stage in his life, and you had goldfish in the part, goldfish in the house, he would go through the tank and eat most of them.
Yeah. Anyway, so he bit in this face, and he said, hell, I can swallow one of these. And so, you know, Dennis and I, ready for a bet, $10, can't do it. It's right away. So Larry Beyond picks out one of these bluegill, pops it in his mouth.
And it's alive.
It's very much alive. Yeah, it's right out of the pond. And pops it in his mouth and, you know, swallows it head first, right? But he got part way down, and he went into, you know, like the gag reflex and started trying to cough it back out. But when he did, it spread its fins out.
No.
And it got lodged in his throat.
True, true. Absolutely true story.
And he's getting all panicky and stuff. And so, you know, he's like, pull it out, pull it out. And so we take a pair of, like, needle-nose pliers and get the fish's tail. and we're pulling on it. And
so his tail is sticking out of his mouth, and they're grabbing it with a pair of needle-nose pliers.
Well, it's pretty far in there.
So
we're pulling on it, but it's spreading its fins out, you know, which are like spines, sharp spines.
Right.
And it's digging into the tissue of his throat. And so, you know, like he's, you know, like now fighting us to stop. And yet he's in pain and he can't swallow it. So, you know, he's, you know, and finally he takes the pliers himself and just rips the fish out. And he's just spitting up blood like crazy. He's like, oh, God, did that hurt? That might have been the single most painful thing I've ever done in my life.
Oh, my God.
And he didn't get his $10.
No.
He didn't swallow it.
He didn't swallow it.
He didn't swallow it. Now, we gave him the option of cutting it up and swallowing it afterwards, but he didn't have it.
So you gave him a second chance to get his money.
Yeah. Just being fair.
Take it. That's no one to blame but himself or something like that. All right. Oh, I got one more thing. I'm going to go back to that soccer game your kid was at.
Yeah.
When the ball came and hit him, was he asleep?
No. Okay, so here's my question that I sent back is, if you're at a soccer match and a ball comes into the stadium and you're a stadium full of soccer fans, if you're a true soccer fan, you wouldn't catch it. You'd hit it with your head.
No, yeah. And it would just bounce up and down all across the whole stadium with people.
Right.
Yeah,
you don't use your hands.
No, you're trained not to do that. Okay, so he's in the stands with his wife, my oldest daughter, And
who'll go nameless?
Know, everybody around him, you know, kind of like patting him on the back. Man, that was cool. That was great. You're so lucky, and all this. And he turns to my daughter and says, "This is the best thing that's ever happened to me."
And okay, so your son-in-law doesn't have any sense at all.
It seems.
Reminds him that they've been married for 12 years, and this is the best thing that's ever happened.
Well, on that note, I guess it's about that time, isn't it?
It's about that time.
It is about that time. See you later from Rick Gator.
Crocodile.
And
Alligator.
This has been the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour. The Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour is brought to you by Uncle Den's Roasters. Tastes just like chicken, but it's not. And by Dr. Ferd's Mail Enhancement. If you want better service, lower postage, and faster delivery, you want Dr. Ferd. No portion of today's broadcast may be reproduced without the express written consent of the North American Alligator Wrestling Association. And with that little bit of legal business in hand, see you later. From Rick Gator, Crocodile, and Alligator, this has been a Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Network production. Accept no substitutes. Like there are any.